Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Let's get straight to the docket. First, we go to school in the Derek Chauvin matter. That's right, day nine is nothing but experts. Second, Lance Armstrong's son has been arrested. Third, a little more analysis of the Daybell Vallo request for a continuance. And fourth, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. All right, let's get straight to the docket today. We go to school in the Derek Chauvin matter, right? Day nine, and it has been expert testimony. Doctor, 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 doctor. That's what it consisted of. And let's be honest, this was not a good day for the defense. This is sometimes, as a defense attorney, you think you're doing okay, you're holding your own, and then it all starts coming in. So who did we hear from today? First, we heard from Dr. Martin Tobin. He was a physician in pulmonary critical care. We heard from Dr. Eisenschmidt, a toxicologist, and Dr. Schmack, who was another forensic pathologist. So, what does it all mean in a nutshell? First, let's talk about Dr. Daniel Eisenschmidt. He is a forensic toxicologist at the NMS Laboratories in Horsham, Pennsylvania. And basically, what he was there to do was to talk about his analysis of Mr. Floyd's blood results. There's been lots of talk that there's fentanyl in Mr. Floyd's system, and he broke it down. We got an expert class on drugs, how they metabolize, what remains the metabolites, and what it really means. Dr. Eisenschmidt went on to basically opine that he has analyzed some 7,000 to 8,000 cases a year at his laboratory, and that they tested George Floyd's blood, but that the numbers really weren't that high. Basically, they're saying George Floyd's numbers as it relates to the fentanyl in his system and the methamphetamine is basically the equivalent to driving under the influence of drugs, what they found when they analyzed those types of results. Mr. Nelson, the defense attorney, cross-examined Eisenschmidt, focusing primarily on the rate of metabolism of certain substances in human systems. Eisenschmidt said that the different drugs do process through the body at different rates. What is that supposed to mean? Clearly, the defense theory is that George Floyd had consumed fentanyl some prior time and then ingested it while he was in the backseat of the police car, or simply just prior to that, as was discovered when they went back and searched the police cruiser later on and they found the fentanyl methamphetamine pills with George Floyd's DNA on it. Obviously, the reasonable inference from that was that Mr. Floyd's must have dropped that into the police cruiser at some time after his arrest. He certainly didn't do it. Again, he never had the opportunity. Why? Because he was dead. So that's the defense theory. The real issue then is going to come down to, was the level of fentanyl in his system, George Floyd's system, enough to kill him? Now, everyone today, and this is why it was kind of a bad day for the defense, was that the answer is no. Now, specifically, we also heard from a Dr. Martin Tobin. He is not a pathologist. Like I said, he's a physician in pulmonary critical care. And although the defense tried to make a couple of points on cross-examination where they talked about this wooden chest syndrome, which is a medical condition where fentanyl can create a rigid chest wall for some users, Tobin agrees it would impede the lungs. Nelson also asked Tobin if fentanyl can cause death by low oxygen levels. Tobin answers yes, but only in part. I'm going to assume that the defense has their own experts that are going to come in and contradict the experts of the prosecution. That's what this case is about. What killed Mr. Floyd? Was it Chauvin or something else? On direct examination, Dr. Tobin stated that a healthy person would have died if they were restrained as George Floyd was on May 25th, lying prone in handcuffs and with his knees pressing on the back of the neck, referring to, obviously, Derek Chauvin. The doctor told the court that he could tell by Floyd's facial expression the moment the life goes out of his body. A slow motion clip of the widely seen bystander video was played in open court, showing the precise moment to the jurors. Tobin explained that because of his working in an ICU unit, he is familiar with watching people die. Unfortunately, Dr. Tobin also went on to explain that when Floyd gasped his last words, "I can't breathe," he still had oxygen in his brain. However, shortly thereafter, he suffered a major loss of oxygen as evidenced by a movement of his leg captured on body-worn camera video. According to the doctor, bottom line is the leg jumps up like that as a result of a fatally low level of oxygen in the brain. While Tobin said that it's true that if people can speak, they can breathe, that's an unreliable motto. When you can speak, you are breathing, but it doesn't mean you are breathing 5 seconds later. The doctor went through and explained through a series of slides how lying prone with pressure on the back can significantly reduce breathing and oxygen reserves in the lungs. He also showed that when restrictions to the airway reach a certain threshold, it becomes a Herculean task to breathe. Needless to say, the prosecution played the video over and over again today to make their point. As we've said before, that is the worst piece of evidence for Derek Chauvin is that video. And as I've said from way back, even a year ago, what's going to get Mr. Chauvin convicted is that smug look on his face when people are saying he can't breathe, and he almost looks as though he's enjoying applying pressure. Dr. Schmock was somewhat of a recap of everyone regarding breathing, pulmonary issues, and that probably the fentanyl was not enough to kill George Floyd. Certainly, the jury is going to have some tough decisions to make. We're going to have to wait and see what evidence, if any, the defense has. Remember, the defense has no burden to call any witnesses, but you would think that they would have experts to counter the experts that were put on today by the prosecution. Now, something's kind of interesting is that the prosecution is spending a lot of time with a lot of witnesses trying to prove that fentanyl ingestion by Mr. Floyd did not cause the death of Mr. Floyd. Now, the prosecution said this was a straightforward case and basically just watched the video for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. But the prosecution now has spent almost a day and a half trying to explain away the defense theory. Clearly, if the prosecution didn't think that it was completely irrelevant, not even close to being a defense that could work, the prosecution wouldn't be spending that much time on it. Just a little note, but at the end of the day, it was not a good day. The piling on by the experts saying fentanyl did not kill George Floyd or could not have killed George Floyd, tough day for the defense for sure. Next on the docket, 21-year-old Luke David Armstrong, the son of world-famous cyclist Lance Armstrong, has been charged with sexually assaulting a 16-year-old after a party in South Austin dating back to June of 2018. Luke Austin was 18 at the time of the alleged sexual offense. His attorneys came out and stated that they were in an ongoing relationship. Now, what's going to be critical in this particular case is I'm sure the prosecutor knows what the age restrictions are for someone who's 18. I'm sure they've figured that out. I'm not sure why the defense attorney is going around saying this was an ongoing relationship, therefore it must be okay. Yeah, you can't do that. Generally, anyone under 15, you can't touch them. If they're 16 and they hold themselves out as 18, you may have a defense if it's reasonable, but If they're over 16 and there's 4 years age difference, that's generally a quick recap of the law. It will vary by jurisdictions. So my advice is don't date anyone under the age of 18. And even then, get proof. And I want a valid birth certificate. And you probably better have that certified on the record. You just can't trust anyone these days, ladies and gentlemen. Let's take a quick recess and we'll be right back. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, a little more analysis of the request by the defense to continue the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell matter. I guess my first question is, why? Mr. Pryor apparently stated on the record that he has some 30 items that he needs to talk with the prosecution about. Well, certainly Mr. Pryor must have known about these 30 items. You would think he would have reached out to the district attorney's office. Well, maybe they were a little too preoccupied with trying to prevent the special counsel from coming on, to disqualifying Mr. Wood from prosecuting the case. And they could have used that opportunity to talk to the district attorney about whatever they have concerns about. Probably it's regarding discovery. We know that there were several phone dumps, which could include thousands and thousands of pages if you had to print them out, of telephone data. There's probably lots of things that need to be done as it relates to expert witnesses. This is a stall tactic. But guess what the court has a problem with? That's right, the Constitution. Every defendant has a right to counsel of his choice, as long as they're paying for them. Each defendant also has a right to effective assistance of counsel. So the attorney is saying, Judge, I just can't be effective for my client. What is a judge to do? You can't, when the attorney's saying, I'm not prepared, can't go forward, then that puts the court in a real bind because they have to also look out for the record. The constitutional requirement that you are entitled to that effective assistance of counsel. Now, at a certain point, the judge is probably going to have to say, we're going to do this next trial setting and no more. Mr. Means, Mr. Pryor, get resolved what you need to get done, but we're going to trial. The next delay tactic that I would anticipate would be potentially forthcoming. That's right. Motion to withdraw, as they have been unable to comply with the written terms of a fee agreement. That's right, running out of money. Just wait, ladies and gentlemen. Just wait and see. It's the next thing that's coming. I would also anticipate, have you ever seen that movie, The Street Lawyer? They moved for a continuance because they couldn't find an essential witness. That's right, Mr. Green, and they got their continuance. That may be the situation here where they're waiting for that essential witness, Mr. Green, Mr. Benjamin, to in fact show up. We'll continue to follow that as always. You just can't make it up. And this is like a classic case. Just not great lawyering, not great control by the judge. It just is dragging on. For example, look at the Chauvin matter. Not even 1 year old. And miraculously, they got the trial, even with delays with the COVID. That's right. Kind of a night and day example of how something should be done. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day, Kevin Wayne Van Leeuwen. And if you've ever wanted to or ever thought about getting Crime Talk Search, this is the example of why you do it. If you have contractors coming to your home, you may want to check them out. Well, Mr. Van Leeuwen was a contractor, and he was there to do some work at a house that the clients were going to put up on the market, you know, fixing up the house prior to sale. When the homeowners left, they received a notification from their baby monitor that there was movement. Out of curiosity, since the child wasn't there, they looked anyway. And what did they see? They found the home inspector, Mr. Van Leeuwen, of pleasuring himself in the child's room with, guess what? An Elmo doll. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think we've had some Elmo doll pleasurings, but most of them have been at stores. What is it with stuffed animals and people pleasuring themselves? Well, Mr. Van Leeuwen, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Not because you wanted to pleasure yourself, no. That you were stupid enough to do it in somebody's house in a baby room. I mean, let's face it, you are 59, Mr. Van Leeuwen. When you had kids, they probably just had baby monitors. Now everything is video. You are our dumb criminal contestant for not keeping up on the times, Mr. Van Leeuwen. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day.